Welcome to RPG Storytime, the channel where we take stories generated out of role-playing games and narrate them in short, digestible segments. Today we continue Gangbusters, the 1920s game of mysteries, mobsters, and mayhem. The module is Death on the Docks by Mark Akers. Today it's AJ who sneaks up on me at her office. I'm already at her desk, hunched over and reading one of her stories when she arrives a half hour late. From the looks of her, it wasn't from preparation of the day. "I have to tell you, I'm impressed," I tell her. "Well, thanks," she says. "But those aren't really big deals." "I know. How you stay awake while writing these is amazing." "Well, your workhorse days are spying on cheating husbands. Mine is writing fluff pieces." "Touché," I say. "What'd you find out?" The body was Ben Whittier. I nearly fall off her chair. Flynn's guards checked it out first. Then everyone ran inside for a while. I began to wonder if they were just going to leave it there for someone else to discover in the morning. Then a bunch of their people started showing up, so Flynn and his guards came out of the house and met him at the gate. They wanted to discuss their move before the cops were called. I wrote down their names as they addressed each other. Several of them mentioned that they don't want to ruin the plan on the dock for this morning. "What's the plan?" I asked. They didn't say. Apparently they all know it, so no one had it explained. "But it's supposed to happen at 10 a.m. I look at my pocket watch and see that it's an hour and a half from now. "That's just enough time to drop by the station and then get to the docks." I stand. AJ seems baffled. "The station? The police station?" "Yeah, I've got a buddy there who can run this plate number. It's the truck I chased last night." "How did that go?" "Someone has a Swiss cheese car now." "They were killed?" "No one was in it. But if it sells more papers, say it was a family with three adorable children who will never see their puppy again." "Wait, when you hand that over to the police, they won't tell you who it belongs to?" "I'm not handing it over. I'm buying info from my buddy." "You're not giving vital evidence of a murder to the police?" "Not until I'm done with it." "Doing the same thing the gangsters did. No wonder we have a crime problem in this city. You want the story? Or you want the police saying, 'Thanks, little lady, we'll take it from here.' I'll drive this time." Along the way, AJ points out that we've gotten wrapped up once again in a snafu, and the original goal was getting lost. "You're supposed to be getting dirt on Flynn," she reminds me. "Flynn is going to get revenge for this murder," I tell her. "My best bet is to find out who that's going to be, and how he's going to do it. Something tells me that whatever they've got planned at the dock today will be part of that. If that's the case, then it's all the more likely that they're planning to do something violent." "Right, then we have something to pin on him. After someone else has been hurt or killed." "Right. Your point?" AJ is looking at me with an appalled look on her face. I roll my eyes. "You want me to stop it before it happens. The fact that you have to ask me..." "Okay, okay. I can check on the license plate after." "So who should I be stopping?" I ask. "The docks are in a near riot. The workers have formed an impromptu strike that are shouting at day laborers who have been hired to unload a ship coming in. A line of hired goons, probably hired by Flynn, stands in a line between them while the regular workers shout at the scabs." AJ looks on in concern. It's obviously a tense situation, and the police are nowhere to be found. She keeps looking in the distance for some form of cavalry to arrive. Ah, the blissful naivete of optimism. "I've got an idea," I say. "What?" she asks with desperate speed. "No one's paying attention to the offices right now. I bet they have files in there that incriminate Flynn, or at least someone close to him." She pulls away from me and says, "You do that. Go ahead and see if you can get in there. I'm going to see if I can do any good." "Don't forget to take pictures for your paper," I say. That makes her angry, but she didn't bring that box hammer under her arm for nothing. I wander over by the offices. The few clerks around them are distracted by what's happening on the docks. Things are getting heated. The boat has just finished pulling up and is getting moored. The scabs are ready to unload things, and the union workers' protests are getting louder. The men between them have their bats ready. AJ gets close to what's happening, still on a higher platform than the line of goons. She's standing among some of the dock workers. She takes out her camera, and as predicted, snaps a picture. She does so at the perfect time, because just after she gets it, all hell breaks loose. A crowd of union workers surge forward and break the line. Goons along the line reinforce the bulge, making other points weaker, which the dock workers break through. Some of them continue on to the scabs, beating them down. Others stop at Flynn's goons and fight them. The men around AJ press forward, some pushing past her, knocking over her camera and nearly trampling her. She leans down for her camera and sees it kicked away by running feet. Chasing after it, she finds herself further in the melee. Men racing to the fight smash into her, forcing her further and further into it. As she looks for her camera and a way out of this mess, she notices a young man, one of the scabs, trying to get out, but being beaten by a union worker. AJ goes to the young man and tries to pull him out. The man beating him persists, and AJ shouts for him to stop. The man just turns on her and punches her across the face, then kicks her in the stomach. The young man she was trying to save could run, but he instead jumps on the man beating AJ. One of that man's friends comes to help, and he yanks the kid off, beating him severely as blood emerges out his mouth. The first one goes back to AJ, ready to smash his foot into her mouth. She comes back with a .22 pistol and fires it directly into his heart. He stumbles back, a shocked look on his face revealing he knows these are his last few seconds on Earth, and he falls back on his butt, dead. His friend looks in horror and backs off from AJ as others turn to look at where the shot had come from. Then an explosion takes their attention, one coming from the ship. I'm in the Union office when that happens. I figured that no one had cleared out yet since its occupants had just died the night before. So I waited until everyone left to join the brawl and sneaked right on inside. I find a large folder full of information just as the explosion happens. It looks like I've got everything I need, and police cars are arriving, so I slip outside while no one's watching. From my higher vantage point, I can see where the cops are sweeping in and making arrests. AJ is caught among them. There's no getting to her. Or if I do, I could get beaten down by a thug on either side, or arrested by the police. In all of those scenarios, these files fall into someone else's hands, so I run for it. But not before AJ looks up and sees me leaving her behind. AJ sits in a cell with all men. Being the only female who was at the docks when the police swept through, it would be inefficient to make a cell just for her. She bitterly plays back in her mind the moment that her supposed friend and partner left her behind. Next to her, one of the younger dock workers looks her way. "Why were you mixed up in all this?" he asks. "I'm a reporter," she answers. "I was trying to learn what I could."
"Goddamn coppers probably didn't even listen to your explanation."
"They didn't. Why did you all begin fighting?"
"The scabs were taking our jobs. Damn owners weren't respecting our rights to strike."
"Who organized it since the union president was dead?"
"How'd you learn about that?"
"I heard some workers talking about it."
"Well, yeah. Ben Whittier was keeping us from exercising our rights. With him out of the way, Comrade Leon stepped in and organized the strike."
"Comrade Leon?"
"He's the guy we all really follow. No matter who gets shoved in as president, he's always the one who's in the trenches with us. He's the heart and soul of the workers."
"Which one is he?"
I don't think he's here."
"Wasn't he on the dock with all of you?"
"Yeah,
but he didn't get taken in by the raid." AJ can see that she's gotten the young man thinking about something he had not considered. She asks him what Comrade Leon looks like so she can keep her eyes open for him. He describes the man as someone in his 50s with longish hair and a trimmed beard whose chin hair sticks straight out, then curls slightly. AJ asks,
"Better wages?"
"Fair wages," he answers determinedly. "Society relies on the backbone of the worker. We deserve our equal share."
He gets a hurrah from several of the men around him. "Do you think the violence today will really help you attain that goal?"
"We will achieve our goal by any means necessary."
Some of the men are beginning to stir, roused up by the young man's rhetoric. An officer comes back to the cells and calls out AJ True's name. She quickly says it's her, and the officer lets her out. She asks which way to her arraignment, and the officer says no need. He gives her things back to her, including her broken camera, and lets her walk out. Feeling guilty, she goes through the front door and almost immediately sees why she's been let out. I'm standing at the curb, leaning back against my car. I think I'm looking pretty suave, ready for her appreciation. But she marches right past, barely looking my way. So I jump into my car and roll along beside her. "Are you mad?" I ask her.
"Now, Mr. Griebel, what could I possibly be mad at you about?"
"I don't know, name it. People are always angry at me about something." She doesn't respond. I tell her, "I had to check on the license plate number. It's registered to one of the dock workers, someone called Leon Alnofsky." That catches her attention enough to glance at me, but not enough to stop. I try something else. "You mad that I left you at the dock?"
She scoffs as if to ask if it wasn't obvious. I tell her, I had to get these files out of there, and they show that you were right. Flynn is taking over the Union. I hold the folder out to her, a chance I don't want to take in case anyone is watching. It works. She stops and she gets into the car. I hand her the files and say, and it looks like it's more than that. His endgame is to run everything at the docks so that he has a clear line from the sea to his speakeasies uncontested. As she goes through the file of personal records, receipts, invoices, etc., I point out what parts are important and why. In particular, I show how they point to Flynn inserting employees into important roles on the docks over the past 8 months. In some instances, new positions were created for those employees. When cross-referencing criminal records, they've all got a history with violence. This is Flynn's little army to keep his workers in line, she observed. And to kill the ringleaders like the one a few days ago, I respond. Who is this WIA? She asks, pointing at some of the correspondents. I don't know exactly who they are, but they seem to be the ones who brought Flynn into the picture. My bet is it's one of the owners. But when you're talking about the docks, you're talking about multiple shipping companies, transportation companies, even insurance companies. Maybe it's the one that owned the ship coming in. I met one of the dock workers in the can, AJ says. He said they turned violent because it was the only option left. He also said they follow someone named Comrade Leon. Probably the same Leon I mentioned earlier. Well, AJ says, holding up the folder, you have what you were hired to get. Evidence to put away Flynn. I shake my head. A good lawyer would be able to explain all of that away as consulting activity. Even if we pinned illegal activities on the people he hired, he's not liable for what the people he hired do. No. We need proof that this WIA hired him to bust some heads, or that he ordered his men to do so. Then what good is this folder you abandoned me for? The contact information. That has all the names and addresses of everyone involved. My favorite is Floyd's lawyer. Lawyers always have dirt on their clients. They also have attorney-client privilege, but their offices are easier to sneak into than a mob boss's mansion. Touché, she says as we enter her office. As we pass the receptionist, AJ is handed a message from someone who called in soon after we had left. It was from an anonymous source, and it reads that if she wants to know what's going on at the docks, meet them at the Blue Parrot at 3 o'clock. It's now 2:30. AJ steps through the front doors of the Blue Parrot a couple minutes before 3. It's a nice place with the lights just dim enough and the flowers just fresh enough to warrant the high prices they charge. The food is okay as well. Having no idea where to go or who to talk to, AJ stands conspicuously at the front where she can be identified by the person who wanted to see her. It doesn't take long. Clearly unconcerned with who else might see him, a man with a greasy comb over half stands and waves at her. She heads over to him, sizing him up as she does. His suit says that he's well off and he wears it like he's used to his affluence. AJ sits across from him with only a hello. She's waiting for him to speak, and he does, quite rapidly. Sorry for the conspiratorial attitude, dollface, but I gotta be careful, you know? What do you need to be careful of? There are some powerful people involved in this. But first, what'll you have? He hands her a menu. She takes it and opens it to take a look. Just then, the bells at the front ring again as two men enter wearing long trench coats under which they hide their arms. As the host welcomes them, they pass by, pulling out their guns from hiding. One of them has a Tommy gun. The other has a shotgun. They are already on their way to AJ's table. She learns of their presence through the other man's reaction. Then she hears behind her, "Hello, Luigi. Time to die." Just before their guns are leveled on their target, a pair of clicks sound behind their heads. They freeze, recognizing the familiar sound of pistols cocking. "Hello, dead man," I say. "You want a chance to live? You drop those weapons." They're still for a long moment. Then the one with the Tommy gun pulls it up, assuming I'm bluffing. I wasn't. My gunshot makes everyone jump and a third of the man's head goes all over someone's table. A pity to destroy such a nice-looking pasta, but it's a good example for the other one who drops his shotgun. "Let's go talk somewhere else," I say to AJ and her newfound friend. They get up and join me. AJ makes sure to take his shotgun and a pistol she spotted in a shoulder holster. He'll be the manager's problem now, and I know he's got some large cooks, so they can decide what to do with them. We set out to a private place, AJ knows. We arrive at a half-built house. We park the car in the garage and go deep into the middle. The smell of pine wood and the dust from drywall hangs heavy in the air with no windows for ventilation. But it's better than being seen by someone with a Tommy gun. The comb-over man has told us his name is Luigi. He mutters that this proves that both sides have gone too far. We ask him what sides, and he promises to start from the beginning. For years, the shipowners had an iron grip over the docks. We banded together under what we called the WIA. What does that stand for? AJ interrupts to ask. The Waterfront Improvement Association. We had the help of Mayor Big Bill Wilson and his police force to keep troublemakers in line. They formed a union, the Longshoremen's Association. It didn't have much power at first, but suddenly, earlier this year, they got a boost of energy from somewhere. We in the WIA didn't know what to do.
You could have paid your workers fairly, I suggest.
Luigi looks at me strangely, then starts laughing. That's a good one. Anyway, we don't know what to do. Big Bill is no longer enough. So we pay Mr. Ned Flynn to come and help. We expect the payment will be enough for him to intimidate the workers into submission. It turns out he has something more in mind. Taking over the dock,
AJ guesses.
Yes. It seems we have traded in troublesome employees for a mobster who wants to take our interests entirely from us. Just this morning, for example.
The explosion, I insert.
Yes. We were forced to sacrifice one of our ships.
What do you mean? AJ asks.
The ship was a decoy. Flynn forced us to send in one of our ships while the longshoremen were on strike. We knew that whoever was in charge of them now wanted to make a strike at him. So he had to send in a decoy vessel that they would want to protest, and apparently blow up. The real one, with all his goods, comes in tomorrow night. Now we owners find ourselves caught between the union workers and the mob.
You realize that your story doesn't make you very sympathetic, AJ says.
Of course it does. We're the lesser of three evils.
The mob, you, and exploited dock workers? Try again, AJ says.
Not just dock workers, he says. We've just learned that the secret leadership they've had are communists, and their plot is not simply to provide their membership with better wages. They have their own agenda, too, and it's much larger than all of the rest of us.
This has been a presentation of RPG Storytime Gangbusters, a playthrough of Death on the Docks by Mark Akers. Tune in next time to hear the conclusion. Subscribe to the channel to hear more tales of RPG games, or check out our YouTube channel. The link is in the description. You can also read books by the writer and game master of these stories by going to bandwagononline.com. We hope you enjoyed it, and happy gaming, everybody!